Now it's time for Homegrown, your show about local art, the only local show dedicated to local art, with your hosts, David Von Strong and Leslie M. Scott Jones, brought to you by the Blue Moon Diner. And now here's David and Leslie.
Hello.
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 How are you?
Russians have taken over this network. No, I'm just kidding. Ooh. I'm kidding.
No,
that is not true. This is Homegrown. This is 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. I am David Von Strun, a.k.a. the Devious One. And with me always is Leslie M. Scott Jones, the loveliness, the lusciousness, the beauty that she is. Leslie, what is up with you this lovely Sunday?
Thank you.
This is not my President's weekend.
No.
How are you doing?
You are absolutely right about
that. For real.
Ain't my President's weekend.
Hashtag Resistance Radio, 94.7 all day, day. That's how we roll.
I have a little bit of a show hangover. You know, I don't get regular hangovers, but I have a little bit of a show hangover.
Well, has been crushing. It's been sold out, like, all the time.
Completely
sold out.
No,
go ahead. Put it on you.
I don't know.
Put it on you, girl. Sorry to show.
Yeah.
Get your tickets if you haven't already.
I'm so excited.
I'm seeing it on Friday. I'm stoked.
You are?
Yeah, so save all your energy.
Yay.
And as a matter of fact, just mail in the Thursday show. I want all of your full attention for me.
On Friday. Okay. So in order for that to happen, I'm going to need
you. So everybody don't see the Thursday. I'm just kidding.
In order for that to happen,
everybody see every Well show.
I'm going to need you, when you come, I'm going to need you to sit on one of the aisles in order to get the full experience.
I got you.
Yeah.
I will be right there.
Yeah.
I will be right there. So back to Trump Watch, which is what we always do in the beginning of the show, because this is a person that needs to be watched over 24/7 as he proves himself to be a toddler at all times. I love the nice pity party he threw for himself in Melbourne, Florida.
I know.
That was
what
very
the
cute.
Hell?
That was very cute. Because I mean, I do that too. Sometimes I invite some people over when I'm feeling down, and I just want to feel loved. Sometimes. And I just want people to talk about me. And actually, can you just get up here and say a lot of stuff about me?
And just tell me how great I am.
Just please tell me.
Lie.
Just somebody tell me how great I am. I'm so lonely. This job is so hard.
David.
I was channeling my inner Donald Trump.
David. Baby, calm down.
That's what he do, though.
But calm down.
That's what he sounds like.
I know.
It's not my president, but this is the president of...
You preaching to the choir over here.
I'm just saying.
I know.
And what's even more interesting is the non-media published anti-Trump protests that were outside of the Melbourne, Florida.
And if you
go to my Facebook timeline, David Von Strun, you will see that I've posted the anti-Trump protests, which probably span at least 3/4 of a mile long.
Wow.
It's
but
nice.
You know, but that's something that he's starting to do because they sent police and... like security guards into the pipeline protest.
Yeah.
But what they did was they surrounded them and did a blackout. So nobody could use their phones. Nobody could video anything that was happening. Mm. So that's what they're starting to do.
Here's what I'm saying. You got all these pipeline workers. You got all these people rounding up, you know, undocumented people in ICE. And NYPD still has a problem with employment. I don't understand. Like, why are y'all still looking for police officers? Obviously, you have enough enforcement going around.
See, now here's the problem.
The military states of America.
They always say that more police is the answer to everything,
more
right?
Guns.
Oh, we've got crime.
More guns.
We
more
need
prisons.
100,000 more policemen on the
Absolutely.
Ground. That's not where the problem starts. Like, the problem starts in our education system. The problem starts in our family structures.
Preach.
Like, and if you would take the money that you would spend on 100,000 policemen and put them into social programs so that kids could get proper daycare, so that schools could have proper textbooks, so that teachers could be paid a living wage, we wouldn't have all of it. It would
all
be
that.
Stopped from the jump.
And that
okay?
what leads
I'm
me to
saying.
The primary topic of Homegrown Show today. What I'm trying to do from now until whenever they fire me is I'm trying to keep a focal point on every show. Right now, I'm choosing education of arts primarily.
Yes.
And with that,
oh
I
my.
Want to shift over. Oh,
I
my
love
God.
The glasses. Those are awesome.
My radio glasses.
Y'all got to let me know before
you do that.
Y'all pull out props. I wasn't expecting. See, this is why.
For those of you who are not watching this Facebook Live,
this is why this woman is what she is to Charlottesville.
And Tom have now put up, they've put on their shades.
We have.
Their future's so bright, they're wearing shades.
We have with us the. I don't know if there's an adjective to describe you, Boomy. I mean, you've kind of been like a cornerstone in the Charlottesville arts community for so long. I mean, I really don't want to, like, you know, wax rhapsodic, but I mean, I just know, like, the connections I have with you. I've worked with your mother, Carol, on, like, scene analysis and scene work in private sessions. I know Sam. He's a glass blower. Your son, August, also works, you know, in live art. So I just want to ask, before I get into why you're here, you know, the play that you're, you know, plugging, what makes it about the Pettersons that run this town so hard? Like, why?
Seriously.
Like, how do you do it? I'm gonna get to you, Mr. Howard. But, I mean, Boomy, you got to tell me how do you do what you do? Because, I mean, you just touch the hearts of everybody, and everybody knows you, and everybody knows what you do and the work that you do.
And how awesome it is.
When it comes out, we know it's going to be amazing. So why do you think that is? Why do you think you're awesome, Boomy, is what I'm asking you.
I don't think that I'm awesome. In fact, my husband is always criticizing me because I put myself down all the time and apologize for myself, which I think comes out of my Catholic guilt and growing up as, you know, a good Catholic girl. I love working with people. I think that's what I love more than anything else, is to work with people wherever they are and see what they have in them that we can create something with. And that, I think, I've worked in the theater for a long time, professionally and non-professionally, and I think what I get most out of it is the sense of community and building something together. I remember when I first met Clinton, which was when I first came here, we were in a show together, Midsummer Night's Dream, and we did this amazing audition. We got to do the Titania Oberon scene together and decided we would have to work together. Wow. That was only in the auditions, because I got cast as Puck and he got cast as... You were... Peter Quince, that's right. So
you can talk, Clinton. You're not.
And I remember sitting outside on Emmett Street, outside the parking garage, talking about the sort of hopes I had, having just moved to Charlottesville and discovering the possibility of doing this play with these people, and how much it would mean to me to feel connected to a community. And I really think, especially now when the world seems to be falling apart around us, that we need to pull in closer and closer to the people that we love and care about and are in community with, and create things that matter. Because what does matter is this human connection, and without that, we're doomed.
Yes.
And I just feel like that's what theater can do, that's what community is, and that's what I'm after. And I think we're all awesome. I mean, the fact that we all participate in this and are willing to make ourselves vulnerable and open and trust and try new things and discover things about people and have open minds, that's what theater is all about, and community, and that's all I have to say about that.
Okay. So before I start crying, I'm just going to...
I know. I'm a little wet.
That's Boomy Pettersson,
Tom,
ladies and gentlemen.
Speechless. He's
but
weeping.
We also have with us the great Tom Howard as well.
Papa Tom!
And they are collaborating to work on the Shakespearean comedy, The Comedy of Errors. Now, I am not a Shakespeare encyclopedia, as unlike the great Clinton Johnson over here, which sits beside me and can tell me everything and anything about Shakespeare. You know, I know the basic hits, you know, Othello, Romeo and Juliet, Merchant of Venice, blah, 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 blah. And whatever I don't know, I read up on and I study the F out of. So for all the people out there, tell us a little bit about the, you know, the synopsis of The Comedy of Errors. What's it about?
Go ahead, Tom.
Feed me, baby.
Not as into rhapsodic wax as Boomy, and nor being a cornerstone.
Wax?
Yeah, well, he was talking about waxing rhapsodic. I don't know that much about rhapsodic wax, but A Comedy of Errors is kind of like a really good first Shakespearean play to go to see if you want to go to the opera, where you take someone to see Deflator Mouse because it's fun and everybody enjoys it. But there's a bit of seriousness to it, as in all of Shakespeare's plays. It's it's a little bit like Three's Company because there's an awful lot of misunderstanding going on with two sets of twins, and one set of twins works in service to the other set of twins. And there's a lot of misunderstanding going on. And then all of a sudden, well, I don't want to give away the ending. But
no, don't do that.
But things do turn out quite well at the end, and people are reunited and all. But I think one of the key things that makes this play work, and you didn't even ask me, in collaboration with, yes, but there's really 10 performers, and I was the one who actually agreed to get up this early in the morning. That's why I'm here in collaboration.
We appreciate it.
Because we did a performance last
this
night.
This early, early 10 o'clock
and,
hour.
Well, we're going to do a matinee this afternoon here. But these 10 performers are folks that we all know, we've worked with before. They're really talented, and I really am just honored to even be a part of it. And so I think it all comes together, and when there's a cornerstone that is directing 10 folks who some of them are older than others, and so we call this an aging gentleman's play.
I thought it was Grumpy Old Men.
What I have on my sheet. I have Grumpy Old Men doing Shakespeare.
You need to get your sheet together
you're gentlemen, are you?
Some of us are older than others of us. And
no, wait
some
a minute,
us,
Tom.
Some,
I know some of the guys in this play. I don't know if gentlemen would actually.
Well, and some of us are kinder and
gentler. She is definitely for
Grumpy. So it's a great play. There's a lot of misunderstanding, and then it all comes together in the end, and if it weren't for the director and the other 9 performers, I don't know that it could come off as well as I think it is coming off.
Describe the I'm sorry to cut you off. Did you have something to say?
No.
Describe the collaborative process during the whole creation of the play and what you wanted to do with it.
Because this is you know, Bumi, for those people out there who may not know, Bumi's in school.
That's right. At my advanced age, I went back to school to get my MFA on account of because the reality of life in the theater is that if you want to work and get paid for what you do, you need to have those 3 letters after your name because nobody takes you seriously. Experience doesn't really count for anything. And I don't agree with that. And now I'm going to have the MFA, which means that's great. I can go get a job at Whole Foods and continue to do the work that I do, which is fine. But it's actually been a huge luxury to go and grapple with some of these philosophical questions about what is theater, why do we make it, where did it come from, how does it go forward, which is one of the reasons I'm doing this whole project, because I'm grappling with all of these questions. And I have also really come to be curious about this ageism that is so rampant in the world right now.
Yes.
I mean, you know, we get older and age, and that's better than the alternative, which is what I keep saying, which is death. Mm-hmm. And yeah, we're all going to die one day. But before we get there, we age, and sometimes we ripen with age, and sometimes we learn more things. And I want to, you know, I've said to Tom, he's probably tired of hearing me say this, but I was inspired to do this project in part by Paul Wagner's film, The Grand Generation, which you can actually watch on the web. It's Folk Streams or something. But it's a documentary, and it's a series of interviews that are woven together of these 7 or 8 older people who are craftspeople. There's a baker, there's a fisherman, there's a musician, there's a quilter. There's a woman who's 102 who worked in the civil rights movement. And it was all about how they don't think of themselves as old people that need to be retired or warehoused.
Right.
They're just human beings who continue to do what they do. And it's like, if you don't do that, what happens to you? And I have a mother-in-law with dementia who's in a home, and I have an incredibly independent mother, as David mentioned, who's very, very active. And part of what my role in her life these days is to help her stay independent by offering her rides because she doesn't drive and getting her places and doing things. And I think that sort of family collaboration is really crucial.
Well, and can I tell you, like, so you and your mom came to the opening night of Well.
Right.
And my mom was at opening night. And my mom goes, they are so cute. I was like, I know, Mom. I was like, I want us to be like them. I was like,
well, you know, what's really interesting? You have your mom and your daughter.
Yeah.
And I have my mom and my daughter.
I know.
My daughter is also in the same MFA program that I'm in.
Yep.
And we talk all the time and I just love going to school with her.
Yeah.
Cool. I'm going to pause this really quick. Clinton, you ready to do a drop?
pausing our love fest.
We're going to do a drop right now. Drop! This is Homegrown. All right, it's 16 minutes past the hour. This is Homegrown, 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. And we are talking with Boomy Pederson and Tom Howard about the comedy Errors. That's actually how it's written on the program. No, not yet, because you already cut me off on my last question. We love each other here. But no, I was trying to talk about the collaborative process. And all of the actors in this play are male. Some are over 50.
All of them
are over 55.
Thank you for the correction. What's up with that? Why make that decision? And I know you said because of the documentary, but go further into that. What did you want to explore about the older generation?
And why this play? Why choose this play to do it?
Wow. Okay, Tom, do you remember what I said? Because maybe you could.
Well, it turns out that this was not a master's program looking for this play, but the play existed with Boomy long before it got brought into the program, and all that she had seen about the aging process and how people think differently and respond differently, and it just and Shakespeare's time, men did the women's roles as well, and so it was just something that fit nicely, inexplicably intertwined with her program into what it evolves into today.
And so I'm going to cite Clinton Johnson again because he's one of my unsung heroes. So there's actually an homage to him in our production.
And because he's
awesome.
As well
there should be.
I know.
Yeah, because he's awesome.
And so Clinton and I were having a conversation because I actually had invited him to take a role. And he's very busy and was not able to, which made me very sad. But in the course of conversation, this came up, why all men? And he reminded me of a conversation we'd had in which I talked about how athletic I feel Shakespeare's language is and how inherently masculine, which doesn't mean that it can't be gentle as well, but there's something in it that is just, it's a guy thing. I don't know what it is. And Comedy of Errors is the most like The Three Stooges. I grew up watching The Three Stooges. I loved The Three Stooges. And
oh, me too.
There's something about the sort of aggressive violence toward each other that becomes funny because it's not dangerous.
Yes.
And that exists very much in Comedy of Errors. Mm-hmm. And I thought it would be interesting to explore that with all men.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a sort of side road. The play itself was a play that we had chosen, the Hamner Theater had chosen to do as our fourth or fifth, I can't remember, fourth tour. That's what it was. It would have been our fourth tour. And we wrote grants and didn't get any money because, of course, we're not an institution. We don't have an infrastructure. We have
people. There's no building.
There's no building. There's nothing that people could see where their money was going to support. And this, again, is another longer conversation about supporting the arts because theater
is so ephemeral. Which we will have later when you come back on the show again.
But theater is so ephemeral, right? So you invest your money and then it disappears and it's like, well, what do I get from it? Mm-hmm. Well, what you get is the experience in the moment.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
But anyway, so then I went and directed it with Larry Goldstein at Tandem. And that was interesting because it was all kids, and they did a great job, but there was something missing. And I thought, no, I really want to do this play and follow what I thought was really interesting about it, which is there's a great theme of time. There's a great theme of memory. And all of these things are things that as we get older, time seems to go much faster. And as you get older, you have less and less clear memories of specific things.
Yes.
But you know they were there. And so there's this trying to grasp for it. So we have older actors who have a harder time memorizing things sometimes. So they are, in fact, doing what they're talking about in the trying to remember what is fleeting.
It becomes kind of meta.
It is meta, but not like overtly meta. Not like well meta.
Well, and I want to
playing at Live Arts, starring the beautiful hostess of Homegrown.
Thank you.
But I want to ask you, Tom. I don't want to assume, but I would guess that you're maybe a person that's maybe reaching 55, if not already there. I'm just going to keep digging this hole that I started when I first walked in.
I'm waiting for the question, and
I love it. There was a question here. How were you affected personally by the whole process of the you know, just being part of the play. Because I know in every play that I'm in, when I take upon a certain role or a character, there's parts about me that I find and I identify with that speak to me in a certain way, in a different way that I'd never thought about before. Is there anything personally that you've learned about yourself?
Part are you playing?
Dealing with, you know, these characters. First of all, yes, what part are you playing specifically, and how would you think that it relates to you personally?
Well,
oh my!
Oh, this is a good this is a good question.
My name is Dromio, and I'm a servant and a twin, and I actually get beaten quite often and beaten down quite often, but I somehow do rebound as much as I possibly can.
The
just being asked by Boomy, the cornerstone of the community, to be in this at all was quite a thing. And then when I showed up and saw all those other people, well, I know these guys. And
right?
It took us a while to remember that we actually all knew each other. It's a process. And we know that at the tandem school, these young folks were good at acting about how difficult it was to get up when they were on the ground. But with us, we're actually just acting it out for real, because it is really difficult when I'm beaten down to the ground. Oh, man, this is hard. Oh, what a delightful actor you are. No, it's really hard to get up off this ground when I'm grabbing some guy by the knees and everything. No, I'm just being there. The textualization of Shakespeare, and just knowing the words and trying to figure out how to best express them and getting them nearly correct most of the time is really quite a thing. And I think the old guys, whenever they come up with their lines correctly, they all go, yippee! And it's like doing crossword puzzles or Sudoku. Man, maybe there's a couple of more days left in my mental years. And so what was your question?
So every day is an adventure, is what you're saying.
Every day is an adventure anyway, but the evenings with this play are, oh, wow.
Oh, my God.
Pretty damn good.
Okay, so
I have a
question for Boomy. Okay, so Tom and I did Kiss Me, Kate together years ago with Liz, with your daughter.
Really? Yeah.
Another family thing going on.
Where did you do that?
Play On.
Oh, wow.
And that's why I call him Papa Tom, because that's where that came from.
I'm not old enough to be her father. Well, yes.
Well, okay. We're not going to go there. When we did Kiss Me, Kate, he was kind of the joker backstage.
What?
He was the practical joker, the one, you know, always had a little something going on. I'm just wondering, is that still the same backstage?
Well, I think you're over-exaggerating a bit, Leslie. I think he's a quiet soul.
I am not backstage with them, so I have no idea what sorts of shenanigans they get into.
Oh, goodness.
But I did intuit that he was a joker, which is why he's playing Dromio, who's one of the two Dromios, and they are the clowns. And don't put on your spectacles and look serious. You cannot fool me.
Oh, my God. So, okay, I got to wrap this up because I'm losing my breath. So the Comedy of Errors, Grumpy Old Men Doing Shakespeare in the Hamner Theater, February 22 and 23 at Live Arts Rehearsal A, February 25th at VCU Schaefer Street Playhouse, and March 10th and 11th at the Ix Art Park Performance Space. Yes, sir.
And this afternoon at the Senior Center at 2 o'clock. There's a
matinee.
Booyah. So,
and I am definitely coming to one of them.
Yes, but not today, because you're playing all the parts today and well.
I am. Instead of five, I'm playing eight people.
You go, girl.
So it's crazy. Tom, you are, oh my God, you're killing me. I got to see the show. And Boomy, like I said, you're everything in this town. And if I ever could be a part of anything that
I
you
would
do,
so love
I
that.
Would
we could have another talk sometime
that.
About diversity in theater in
yes.
this town, because I really feel like that's a really important conversation.
Well, and you know what? I think what we're going to do is create a show, a whole hour with a panel to talk
that
about that.
That would be so cool.
Yeah.
That'd be great.
Yeah.
All right. Boomy Pedersen, Tom Howard, thank you so much.
Thanks.
This is Homegrown. We're going to do a drop. We'll be right back. Homegrown.
Class.
I know. I don't know what to talk.
This is Eli Cook, and you're listening to Homegrown on 94.7.
All All right, we are back. Here are some of the artistic events that are happening this week here at Homegrown, also in Charlottesville. Currently running through April 9th is the Renaissance season at the American Shakespeare Center. This season features The Merchant of Venice and Coriolanus by Shakespeare and Sheridan School for Scandal, Emma Whipday's Shakespeare Sister, and for five performances only, The Fair Maid of Exchange by Nonnes, all playing at the Blackfriars Playhouse in Stanton. Currently running now through to March the 23rd, Memory and Cultural Beliefs by Cuban artist Jose Bedia at the 2nd Street Gallery. Also now through March 29th is Aaron Eichhorst's Inner Outlook in PVCC's North Gallery and in the South Gallery, Nancy Bass's Life Size, new paintings of The Herd and Ailey Gregg's Idol Worship at Piedmont Virginia Community College. February 21st is the inaugural cohort of the College and the Graduate School of Arts and Sciences. Art Fellows hold a roundtable discussion on art and the F word, and I'm going to see that at Jefferson Hall, Hotel C, West Range of the Lawn at UVA. Also on the 21st is Best New Poets Reading at the UVA Bookstore, featuring John James, Matthew Wimberly, and Jenny Malboff. February 22nd through the 23rd is the Comedy of Errors, which we just talked about, at GOMDS in the Hamner Theater at Live Arts, Rehearsal A, 7:30. February 23rd through the 26th is UVA's French Film Festival. French Film Festival. French Film Festival. Say that three times fast. February 23rd through March 2nd, Blood Wedding by Federico Garcia Lorca, translated by Langston Hughes by the UVA Drama Department in their Culper Theater. Also on the 23rd is Virginia Museum of Fine Arts in Richmond presents African American Readin'. Richmond community leaders and museum staff read works by black artists. Also on the 24th is 4th Friday's Improv Workshop at PVCC. And also on the 24th is Bent Theater's This Isn't Normal, a comedy show at the Bridge PAI. That's my true people. The 25th is, of course, premiere screening of the documentary film Albemarle's Black Classrooms at the Jefferson School African American Heritage Center. Also on the 25th, Comedy of Errors again, GOMDS, and the Hamner Theater at VCU's Schaefer Street Playhouse at 3 o'clock and 7 o'clock. Also on the 25th is Lapio AO at Comedy Open Mic, hosted by Chris Allen. It's a Southern Cafe music hall. I'm going to be there. I'm going to be doing some things. Also on the 25th is Removing the UN from Unpublished, the Business of Publishing Picture Books, a 10 o'clock to 2 o'clock p.m. seminar instructed by former guest Anne Marie Pace and the Charlottesville Writer House. Also on the 25th is Nasty Women for Planned Parenthood, a group art exhibition demonstrating solidarity among artists who identify with being a nasty woman in the face of threats to roll back women's rights. And for your music options this week, this afternoon, we have Michael Clem at Cunningham Creek Winery and Farm Store. Also, a recital of the PVCC music faculty performing classical and modern works at the B. Earl Dickinson Building. Also this afternoon, Two Wishes at the James River Brewery and Shenandoah Recorder Society at the Front Porch Roots Music School. It's nice out this afternoon, y'all. Come on and get out. It's going to be 70 degrees outside. Tonight, music director finalist Adam Boyles conducts the Charlottesville Symphony and Sibelius Violin Concerto and Nielsen's Fourth Symphony. Also tonight, Lewis Smith at Cafe Cultura, Travis Elliott at Rapture. And on the 21st is Nick and Steve Pollock at Dirty Nellie's, Goth Night at the Southern Cafe Music Hall, Charlottesville Jag Congregation at Cafe Couture, and on the 22nd, we got Pale Blue Dot at Rapture, Mama Tried at Dirty Nellie's, Michael Ellswick Gathering, and Tyler Dick at Fellini's, and also Deer Squad, members of Lord Nelson, joined with Bobby St. Hours and Brittany Wagner at the Whiskey Jar. Okay, February 24th is Bob Benetta's at Fellini's, Funkalicious Samba Soul by Beleza at Glenn's at Glass House Winery, Original Acoustic Jazz Grass, quotations with Fermata Mafia at Cafe Couture, Open Music Jam at James River Brewery, Timmy Riles at Dirty Nellie's, Jason Burke, Bill Statton, and Turtle at the Pro Reynada Farm Brewery. Also on the 24th is DJ Two Low's Country Night at Tavern on the James. That's all on the 24th. All that stuff I just mentioned is on the 24th. February 25th, UVA Jazz Ensemble, Winter Concert at Old Cabell Hall, The Cocomotions at the Batesville Market, and Full Tones to the Max at Dirty Nellie's and Tequila Mockingbird at Heritage on Main. Also, Gina Sobel at Albemarle Cider Works. And on the 25th, geez, a lot of stuff on the 25th. Also, 25th, Alex, Kevin, and friends at the Tin Whistle Irish Pub. The Rivanna Trio plays Rapunzel's Jazz Sessions at Rapunzel's Coffee and Books. Robert Jospe, Expressive Fellinis. And then every Monday, we got singer-songwriter and I at the local. Every Tuesday, traditional Irish session at the Tin Whistle Irish Pub. Every Wednesday, open mic night at Pro Renata Farm Brewery. Every Wednesday, Jazz Collective number 9 at Fellini's number 9. Also, the Mike Rosensky and Jeff Decker Quartet at Miller's. And every Thursday, John Dearth Quintet at Miller's. If you want an artist and you got an event, you want people to know about it, you want to tell them, contact us at our Facebook page at web.facebook.com/homegrownwpbc or email us at homegrown947@gmail.com. All right, we're going to do a drop. Homegrown.
Hi, this is Jason Burke of the Six Pack Songwriter Series. You're listening to 94.7 FM, Homegrown.
I just love the way he says that. Seriously, I love it.
As do I. It's a beautiful...
What?
Blue Moon. All right. Now, we got to plug our people. We got to pay these bills. All right, Blue Moon Diner. Breakfast all day, every day, with brunch on Saturdays and Sundays, and carefully constructed diner food on weekdays, afternoons, and evenings. And speaking of evenings, Blue Moon is nice enough to provide a venue for local and visiting artists. This week is Tuesday, Jamie Dyer and Friends. Wednesday is Jim Wave. Thursday is fingerstyle arrangements of blues and old-time tunes by Bill Adams. And Friday is swampy southern rock with the Missing Headstones. And that's Blue Moon Diner at 512 West Main Street. Awesome. Now we got that out of the way. Let's get to our guest. How you doing today, man?
All right, pretty good. Thank you for having me.
So with us in the studio is Lorenzo Dickerson. He has made a documentary called Albemarle's Black Classrooms. It's going to be showing, it's going to be premiering. That's the whole world premiere. Big red carpet event.
For sure.
Shamar Moore's going to be there. He's going to take off his shirt on the red carpet.
Oh, wait. Shamar Moore's going to be
calm
there.
Down,
wait,
Leslie.
Wait.
Calm down,
wait,
Leslie.
Wait. You ain't telling me that, Lorenzo.
February 25th at the Jefferson School African American Heritage Center. Now, Lorenzo, I want to just talk to you about your personal experience. First of all, did you grow up in Albemarle?
I did. All right. Raised, growing up here.
All right. When did you graduate?
Graduated from Western Albemarle High School in 1999.
Cool. I graduated from Louisa in 1998.
He's a baby. Y'all babies. Babies.
So just talk about, like, I just want to, you know, because we have, like, similar Virginia classroom experience. So just talk about your experience, because this is an art show, particularly in the arts, you know, about, you know, the classroom that you were raised in and what you were taught and how it was different in the 80s as, you know, as it is now.
Definitely. You know, my personal experience, I definitely I grew up with the experience of being one of the very few African Americans in the classroom at the time. Mm-hmm. So that was definitely my experience. Is at one point when I was in the fifth grade, there were two African Americans in the fifth grade, myself and the first cousin of mine. Right. So when you look back at this history, you know, some things don't change.
Right.
You see, you know, some people that went to some of these segregated schools and then they integrated schools in 63 here locally, and they were in that same situation where they were one of very
few. So I was going to say, so go into that. Why do you think that is? What did you learn in, like, researching the whole topic of black classrooms, especially in, you know, Central Virginia, about why that is?
Yeah. And well, historically, I mean, there was something called the Pupil Placement Board in Virginia, which really, during the time of integration, it was created to keep schools segregated, right? So that's why when you hear stories of integrating schools, you hear about one or two or maybe three people integrating a school.
Right.
Yeah, because for a lot of people that don't really know about how integration happened, it wasn't like everybody, all schools were integrated at once, like poof, it happened. Like, this was like a whole, like, trickle down effect, and everybody kind of had to go in line state by state by state. But go on. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so you had this pupil placement board that placed, you know, which students would go where to what schools, and it basically just kept the schools segregated.
Right.
So I've, you know, learned a lot about that, and of course, like I said, in my own experience, which was years later, here I am, one of only two in the fifth grade.
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, some things don't change, and it could be a lot of times it can be economic, it can be geographic. There's various, you know, different reasons why that can happen.
Mm-hmm. So what sparked the interest to start creating this documentary? What sprung you out of bed was like, okay, I need to put this on celluloid. Like, I need to get this word out. Like,
yeah.
What happened?
Two things, really. My grandparents went to these schools, these segregated schools in Albemarle County. So I always grew up with these stories in my head, being told these stories from my grandparents.
Right on.
But then also a lady, Miss Shirley Parrish, who's here locally in the area, she suggested that I make a film about Rosenwald schools. There was seven of those schools here in the county.
Now, what's a Rosenwald school?
Rosenwald schools were, so initially, there was these one-room schoolhouses out in the rural parts of the county. They were, looked like one-room shack.
Right.
No windows.
Schoolhouses.
Schoolhouses,
essentially.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Booker T. Washington had a partnership with Julius Rosenwald, the president of Sears Roebuck at the time, to upgrade these schools.
Right on.
So they created a lot of these two-room schools with a lot of natural light.
Ooh, windows. An extra room.
Exactly.
We got two upgrades.
My grandmother went to one of those schools in Palmyra, and
okay.
It was just recently made into a historical site and has been completely revamped. They completely redid one of the classrooms to look as it would have when
nice.
People were there. And yeah, so I know exactly what you're talking about. Which,
right on. Continue.
Yeah, when she suggested that I make a film about the Rosenwald schools, and I decided why not expand it and make it about education for African Americans as a whole in Albemarle County. So the film starts at about 1910 and goes up to the present.
Okay.
Wow. That's a lot of ground to cover.
It is.
How long has this taken you?
About 18 months to film and edit. I edit pretty quickly, so it took a couple months to edit.
And where did you get most of your research from? Was it just by like word of mouth and just like interviewing people like around the way, like in the neighborhood, or
yeah.
just like going to UVA? And, like...
Definitely special collections at UVA,
okay.
Albemarle also Historical Society. But the two things that were probably the most helpful were local African-American churches, because these schools were affiliated with churches typically
yes.
that are right next door.
Yeah.
So a lot of times you can contact the church and they'll tell you, oh, you know, we have 8 alumni that go to that
yeah.
the school that are right here.
Okay.
That type of thing. But then there's also a group called the Central Virginia History Researchers Group here in Charlottesville, and they meet once a month and just share what they're working on, the research that they're doing. And three or four of the people from the group are in the film talking
oh, wow.
about the history behind the schools and that type of thing. Yeah.
Nice.
So, what is the one thing you want people to come away from when they finish watching this documentary?
Yeah. I really want them to be more aware of the history. Some of these schools we still use today
right.
as schools. So, you know, we still use Burley as a middle school. We still use Virginia L. Murray. But, you know, the students go in and out of the schools every day.
And don't realize.
Exactly. Yeah. Don't realize it. So I really want to bring a greater awareness to the history of the people who went to these schools and then the buildings themselves.
Right on. Right on. Did you face any adversity researching this project? Did you have any people that were just kind of like, you know, I really don't have that information?
I don't want to talk about that. That's going to bring up some bad
feelings. I mean, why do you want to bring all that stuff up anyway? Why can't we just focus on the present
can't we just
and not
get along?
Worry about the past?
Right.
I mean, we've changed so much as a people, you know?
You
so, like, has there been any, like, pushback? I always ask, because there's adversity in every project. That's, you know, why people kind of, like, shy away from doing anything, because they're like, oh, well, what if I run into this or that? So, mm-hmm. like, you know, especially with artists, when they go into creating something, they face adversity and then they quit. So, mm-hmm. like, tell me something that you had to face and some obstacle that you had to overcome in creating this documentary.
With creating this documentary, really, the main piece of adversity is just really people being camera shy.
Interesting.
Because a lot of times, you know, with... some of the people in the film, they're in their 80s. The oldest person in the film is 102.
Oh, wow.
So
there are definitely people who are camera shy,
mm-hmm.
and they don't think that they have a story to tell. So
that's interesting.
So
you kind of like pry it out of them. And
yeah,
it's like,
I have to explain to them, you know, you don't really know what story you have until I ask it.
Right.
You know, until I
right.
ask the question, you never think of it.
Right.
I'll give you a quick story. I was
Please do. The
woman that's 102. I went to interview her for this film and I brought two of her nieces with me to the interview. And the nieces are in their 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And
wow.
she told me, I was asking her about going to the St. John's School, which is in community called Cobham, which is near Keswick, Virginia. And she tells me, yeah, I went to the school, which is a Rosenwald school, two-room school. She says, but I didn't go to that school. I went to the old school.
What?
Damn.
So we're like, the old school? The two nieces had never heard of that, that there was an old school in that same spot.
Wow.
I had just been at the Albemarle Charlottesville Historical Society looking through old newspapers and things, and I see this picture of St. John's School, that school. But it was a one-room shack with no windows. It wasn't the same building, so I kind of disregarded it. But I kept the image. So when I interviewed her and she told me that, I was, aha, that was that building. You went to that one-room shack.
Oh,
that's
wow.
crazy.
Before it became a Rosenwald school.
That's crazy.
So it's interesting. Like I said, the two nieces, they learned about that day when I asked that question.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And go ahead. I'm sorry.
So we always hear that a lot of feature filmmaking really happens in the editing room. So it's how a film is cut together that makes it what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Is that true for documentaries too? I mean, because you said you did the editing pretty quick.
Yeah, well, I think it's just me. I edit pretty quickly, but that definitely rings true. And of course, with this film is the longest film that I've done. Most of the films are about 45 to 50 minutes that I've done previously.
Right.
And this film has a lot of people in it. It's got about 30 people in the film.
Oh, wow.
So it took me, like I said, 18 months or so, and most of that time was the filming process. So mm-hmm. now I have to go back and watch through
everything,
all of this footage, and put it together. And I'm learning a lot, like, oh yeah, that's right, that person said that. That mm-hmm. fits well here, this goes well here. But I, you know, didn't realize that as I'm filming it, because it's documentary work, so you kind of never know where the story is
going to go. Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's really interesting when you start the editing, because you never know what's going to happen.
So what was your, besides the 102 woman that told you about her one room schoolhouse, what was the most shocking thing you learned when you were doing these interviews?
Most shocking by far was, we hear about these blackface minstrel shows. We see them in movies all the time and that
right.
type of thing. But I'm looking through a yearbook of Albemarle High School, 1962, the year before integration in 63.
Right.
And there it is, a blackface minstrel show in the school.
Way.
Yeah, it's one of the photos, like you're having a play, you have a sports picture, that type of thing.
No
blackface minstrel show right there.
Hmm. That's the most interesting drama class.
62.
Yeah.
Well,
I think my dad was 10 then. Yeah.
But that explains why Virginia was the last state to desegregate their schools.
Right.
You know, like. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
We are actually gonna get that into that. Like,
yes, and UVA fraternity is carrying on that tradition till today. Thank you.
Hey, shout out to Richard Spencer,
yeah,
UVA alum.
Thanks for holding that one up.
No, we love our Charlottesville. So we're going to come back. We're going to talk more about, you know, the shocking stuff, everything. I also want to ask you about, you know, other work that you've done, you know, other works that you've done. So we're going to do a drop in a minute. WPVC 94.7, this is Homegrown. It is 45 minutes past the hour, and this is Homegrown, 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. Damn, that music got me hyped.
Right?
Yo,
I'm like, woo!
Oh, Jesus. Stay tuned after the show for the Sunday morning wake-up call with your host, Rick Moore. Today's show is pre-recorded. Their guest is Reverend Eric Wickstrom of the Thomas Jefferson Unitarian Universalist Memorial Church.
Woo.
Say that three times fast.
Right? That's
a
mouthful.
Yeah. So, tune in for that. But right now, we are talking to Mr. Lorenzo Dickinson, director of Albemarle's Black Classrooms, his newest documentary, premiering on February 25th at the Jefferson School African American Heritage Center.
But you've done other stuff, Lorenzo.
You've done other stuff.
Lorenzo is a returning guest on Homegrown, okay?
Mm-hmm. We got to get as much of these black folks in as
right?
possible.
So what other stuff, for those people living under a rock, what other... There are documentaries, because that's what you do. You do documentaries.
I do. I've done a documentary called Anywhere But Here, which was in the Virginia Film Festival this past year.
Yep.
That was a set of interviews with 13 African-American men that are incarcerated at the local Albemarle Charlottesville Regional Jail.
Mm.
And they were telling their stories about their lives, how they got into that situation, what they would do differently, what they've learned. It talks about mass incarceration, that type of thing. Also did a film on the 1956 Burley football team. Their team was undefeated, unscored upon in 1956. The first film I did was called The Coachman. That was an ancestry project that I was doing. My second great grandfather was a coachman in Keswick, Virginia, and he moved to Philadelphia during the Great Migration, and he's buried there in the oldest African American cemetery in the country. It's called Eden Cemetery.
Mm. Wow!
So it seems like you delve into a lot of subjects that are. And most documentaries do this, but not to the degree that you seem like you do in your work, where you just try to recreate stories of the past and kind of unearth the mass of stories that have been buried by whatever reason, especially in this region in Charlottesville. Mm-hmm. What impassioned you to like make that a focal point of your career? It seems like that's what you want to do. It seems like you don't want to go anywhere but else. I want to focus on Seville. I want to focus on, you know, mostly my people, mm-hmm. not just black people. I'm just talking about my regional people of Charlottesville, the history here, yeah. The rich history that has yet to be explored, that we have yet to know about. What impassions you to keep searching for that?
Yeah, I love storytelling. My background.
Why do you think that is?
I used to, as a child, I used to sit at my grandmother's feet. She had this one particular chair that she would sit in and read the Bible from. And I would sit at her feet and ask her to tell me stories of the olden days.
Yes.
So it's always been an interest of mine. She would sit there and, you know, tell me stories for hours of all, you know, all types of different things about mm-hmm. meeting my grandfather. And my grandfather passed when my father was a little kid in a
Mine
car accident.
Too.
So I never got to meet him. So I used to always ask her stories about him and that type of thing. So it's always been an interest of mine. And I just moved back here about a year and a half ago.
Right.
Because we were in Maryland for about a year. We were in Raleigh for about 11 years. But we decided to come back here so our kids can be close to their grandparents, and all of our family, both myself and my wife, our family are from here.
Absolutely.
So I've you know, Charlottesville's always been home, so it's always been an interest of mine, and it just makes sense to tell stories of the people here.
Absolutely.
So how is telling these stories of home changing you? Has it changed your perspective about home?
It has. It's made me more aware of the people and the people's stories. So, you know, you go through your everyday life going to work and doing different things, and you never get to really know people and understand their stories.
Yeah.
So that's definitely changed me a lot to be able to learn from these people. So the filmmaking is great, but I really enjoy meeting with the elders and allowing them to tell me stories. My grandmother's no longer here, so she can't tell me the stories.
But that's something that I think has fallen by the wayside, especially in the black community, when our history was so oral for mm-hmm. so long. And we got away from hearing those stories or even asking for those stories.
Right.
So yeah, if it can migrate into becoming film and theater, how we tell those stories, I think that's amazing. And I think that is so worthwhile.
Do you view yourself as an artist, Lorenzo?
I do. I definitely view myself as an artist. Artist first, for
Absolutely.
Sure. Yeah. I really love, you know, just really love the work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I asked that question because some people, you know, from a technical perspective, you know, a director as an editor as you, necessarily don't view their work as, you know, art. They just view it as, you know, it's a medium, mm-hmm. definitely, but I guess they wouldn't feel it as heartfelt as, say, like a sonnet or like a song or something like that.
Right.
Would you kind of, because I know whenever I write something, it's my baby. I have a really hard time editing. I've said this in, you know, other interviews before. So, you know, discuss that. Like, how do you, you know, transform your work and how do you separate it from your personal experience? But this is going to be your last question before I go. So let's just wrap everything up and how you feel about that.
Yeah, editing can definitely be difficult because there's so much footage, and I want to keep it all. I want to put it all in the
absolutely.
Film, right? I want you to
like
watch
a four-hour documentary.
Yeah, exactly.
Eight seasons on Netflix. Like.
So I had to be really disciplined with that because I'll make a film super long if
absolutely.
I could. So yeah, I struggle with that piece. And like you said, it definitely is my baby. And this particular project is just like it's more lengthy than normal. And I've put a lot of work into it.
Is it time consuming? Does your wife like Lorenzo? Like come to bed? Like it's 2 o'clock in the morning.
Right.
You're still in front of your computer. Like how does it affect you? Because you say you got kids too. So
yeah.
Like I'm sure the editing process. Like how does this intertwine with your personal life?
And Daddy can't work right now.
Daddy
he's making a film.
Right.
Daddy's been working for 14 hours.
I mean, I was up until 2 this morning.
Word.
With this film, just like watching it again and that type of thing. Like oh maybe I'll change.
Making
that.
Sure
I mean,
you got it right.
Exactly. Yeah. So it can definitely it takes up a lot of time, especially you know nights and weekends and you know
because you have a 9-to-5.
I do.
Right.
I do. Yeah.
Like the rest of us artists
the rest
out
of
here.
Us.
Exactly.
Yeah. This guy's a multiple documentary filmmaker and also working at 9-to-5. So
that brings up the other question: is where do you get your funding? Because film ain't cheap.
Word.
Definitely. Funding, mostly is just me.
Yeah.
It's all me, but this particular film, I did get some funding, from someone. Interesting story. She lives in Keswick, and the property that she lives on used to have a black school on the property.
Oh, wow.
Catholic school.
Right.
And she also has African-American cemetery behind the house. She didn't know it when they bought the house, but it's there. So I was able to visit with her and,
awesome.
And that type of thing. So she did provide some funding for the film, and she's in the film as well. She's really interested
in that cool. Keswick old money. That's where he got it from.
Hey.
All right. So what's next on Lorenzo Dickinson's project list? What's the next project coming up?
What
are you thinking about?
I'm going to take a little bit of a break. When I say
please
a little
take some
bit,
time off, brother. Stop.
I mean,
take some quality time with your woman. Stop working so much.
A few months, but you know, possibly a scripted film. So possibly writing a screenplay for a scripted film.
Ooh.
Or a novel. So we'll see how what comes about. Yeah,
right on. So all right, this is Homegrown. This is Lorenzo Dickinson. Albemarle's Black Classrooms, February 25th, Jefferson School, African American Heritage Center. What time is that showing?
It's at 3 o'clock, but the show on the 25th is sold out now.
Ah,
but there's an additional show on the 26th.
Ah,
if you go to Maupintown, Maupin, Maupintown.com, you can get tickets for the 26th at 3 o'clock. It's
okay,
show
Maupintown.com, 3 o'clock. Get those tickets. All right. Thank you so much for coming on the show. We're going to have you back. Have you back. Jedi Mind Trick, we will have you back. All right. Thank you so much. We'd like to thank our guests, Boomy Pedersen and Tom Howard, along with Lorenzo Dickerson, coming up next.
Weekly Rant.
Sunday Morning Wake Up Call with your host, Rick Moore. And this show is pre-recorded. His guest will be Reverend Eric Wickstrom of the Thomas Jefferson Unitarian Universalist Memorial Church. But now we are going to go to our rant with the lovely Leslie M. Scott Jones.
Well, hello. It's time to talk about history. I'm not talking about the history we all learned in school, although it should be. I'm not talking about all the things that actually... I'm talking about all the things that actually happened that are left out of our school system. How many of you learned about Octavius Cato, Madam C.J. Walker, Septima Clark, Diane Nash, or any of the Tuskegee Airmen in your high school or even college history class? I'd venture to say not many of you. Most of us know Emmett Till, but did you know about him before the woman who accused him came out recently saying that she lied? And the next logical question is, what was your reaction? Did it affect you in any way? Did it challenge the way you think about segregation and Jim Crow? Did it challenge how you think about your privilege or lack thereof? It should have. Recently, a sixth grade teacher was put on administrative leave for asking the black students in her class to play the role of slaves in a lesson she was teaching about a Haitian slave revolt. Hearing that, you might think the school was in Alabama or Georgia. You'd be wrong. It was right over the mountain in Stanton. And as you can imagine, the black children were upset. When a couple of white kids offered to portray the parts of slaves, she denied them, saying, "You're white, you can't be a slave." And there you have it, folks. This teacher has illustrated perfectly the problem with our school system. There's no context. Maybe the teacher was trying to point out the inhumane and sinister nature of the slave system so a bunch of sixth graders could understand it. Maybe she was trying to follow in the footsteps of Jane Elliott's blue eye, brown eye exercise. Or maybe she was truly ignorant to what she was doing and therefore did it badly. Nevertheless, she brought a sledgehammer down on one of the touchiest subjects in America, slavery. First, black folk, you need to realize that a lot of us are the product of slavery. We need to breathe that in because it is the one thing that has inevitably marked our existence in this country. We also need to realize that because of that, we should have a knowledge in our very DNA of how strong we are. Being the descendants of enslaved people is nothing to be hidden from or ashamed of. The survival of it should be celebrated and cherished. The survival stories should be told not in hushed, reverent tones, but in loud voices so everyone can hear. The truth is, we do come from kings and queens, and their majesty was not stripped from us. It still lives inside us. And in order to embrace that, we need to embrace what was done to us. Second, white folk need to learn to put aside your guilt and your automatic defense reaction when slavery is mentioned. Y'all nut up every time like we accusing you. We're not. We're just stating the truth. We are telling our story. And part of that story begins with what some of your ancestors did to some of ours. And let's be real. You react with defense because you haven't reconciled that truth of that in your own life. You have not taken the time to truly understand and mourn about it. Then you need to realize that the systems of this country were put in place by revengeful Southerners wishing for the day when life was easier for them. The entirety of our Constitution has threads of denigration and subjugation of brown skin running through it. It's not that it took until the 60s to get the black man the vote. It's the fact that law needed to be passed at all. That's the problem. It's not that Brown versus Board of Education was in response to a racist structure leaving black schools with less resources than white ones. It's that all schools weren't funded equally in the first place. It's not about the 13th Amendment making all slaves free. It's that it left a loophole that police departments all over the country used and still use to this day to marginalize and criminalize black bodies, which has given birth to a different kind of slave labor system, a system that they can grow, that they can now get money from by making prison a business. I don't know what this teacher's motives were. For all I know, she could have had good ones. And while I don't question her impulse to tell the truth about slavery, I question the way she did it. I question why she followed up with an impromptu screening of Roots instead of simply having a conversation with the entire class about why slavery was wrong, how we should treat each other, no matter the differences we have from them. I wonder why she couldn't admit to her class that she went about it the wrong way. And part of the reason she believed it was okay was the privilege she enjoys as a white woman. What does this have to do with art? Everything. As artists, it is our job to tell these stories. It is our obligation to shine light into the dark places so we can all understand them better. Art has the power to heal. Art has the power to transport you into the shoes of someone completely different from you. And once there, you can understand and feel how they felt. And with that understanding, we can all grow. We can all learn. We can, all of us, finally be recognized as human and valuable.
Agreed. This is Homegrown.
You've been listening to Homegrown on 94.7 WPVC LP Charlottesville. You can contact the show on Facebook by searching Homegrown Charlottesville. Be sure to tune in again next Sunday at 10 for Homegrown, only on 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville.